Welcome to the SysAdmin Show, the podcast that explains everything sysadmins do and the technology they work with. I'm your host, Dustin Raybrook, here to give a jumpstart to your IT career. Today's show is episode 29, Arbitrary Update, Link and Audio Codes, Troubleshooting, HP Server Workstation, and Behind the Podcast. Well, hey, everybody. I have a quick show here. I'm doing some things a little bit differently. This is only my second arbitrary update. And the rules here, if you did not catch the first one, are anything goes. This is just whatever I want to talk about at the time. As I mentioned in the opening line there, I want to talk about a few specific things, and I've given myself only about 20 minutes to do it. I've got a hard stop in about 20 minutes here, so I may breeze through some of this. Let's see how it goes. Let's start out with Link and Audio Codes. So my production environment is Microsoft Link 2013, and we use Audio Codes gateways, both for SBCs, that's session border controllers, to manage SIP trunks, as well as Audio Codes, the smaller like MP118 gateways, to take analog lines and convert them into VoIP lines and vice versa. Recently I had a situation, I was setting up a new site and needed to get one of those gateways working. Now, historically, I've always worked with vendors to get them set up, but I looked at the configs. It seemed pretty straightforward. I didn't see anything that I couldn't do. So went ahead and took that on myself. And when I finally got to the testing phase, it was not working and had a little bit of a deadline looming. So decided, okay, let's partner with a vendor. And I got this thing 95% of the way there. There's obviously just some configuration or routing rules that I'm not seeing. So partner with a vendor, get their expertise in here, and we'll go from there. And in this particular situation, this technology we're using, the vendor that we had that deployed the majority of it is no longer in the business. They're not available to us anymore as a resource. So we were already kind of hunting for a new vendor and found a new one after taking a look at a few options. And got them, you know, got everything set up. You know, when you're setting up a vendor, you, as I mentioned back in, what is it, episode 9, managing IT vendor relationships, right? You want to kind of do as much communication up front as possible, review the contract terms of service, SOW, and make sure everyone's clearly understanding what's going to happen and who's responsible for what, and have that written down so that there's no surprises. So we did all that and got to work, and the tech took a look and kind of blessed my config and said, hey, everything that you've done so far looks great. I don't see why this wouldn't work. And this was over a period of about 2 weeks working with the vendor, maybe 3 or 4 engagements, a couple hours each with them. We're looking at a lot and they're just learning my environment. So I'm giving them a little bit of a, you know, some leeway here. Every environment's different, so maybe they're just catching up, but they really weren't making any progress. So I reviewed my own configs for the 3rd or 4th time and did some more research and found that I had the new gateway in the Link topology set up as using TLS, and all my other ones were set up using TCP. And that was a red flag. And when I looked at some other configs and recommendations people were making was to just use TCP, and TLS is something that would require certificates, and I did not set up any certificates, so that would explain why that wasn't working. Not that it couldn't, but I had not done the setup to make it work that way. So I switched it over to TCP, and what do you know? Everything started working. So I bring this up for a few reasons. First of all, ultimately, we, the sysadmins, the people in IT, are going to be responsible for the support and reliability of our solutions. Now, I like to partner, I've mentioned this before, I like to partner with vendors kind of as much as possible, but definitely for the higher end engineering tasks, the bigger, heavier lifts, I like to partner. But just because you partner, that does not mean you can pass the buck. That does not mean that you are not responsible. And that even goes as far as the cloud. If you are going to Office 365 or any other cloud service, you, the internal IT department, you, the sysadmin, you're still responsible for that solution, even if the cloud service is down. So you have to take that into account. If the cloud service is down, sure, it's their job to get it back up, and they have hundreds of thousands or millions of clients that are feeling the same pain you are, and so you can kind of point the finger. But ultimately, if that's happening on a regular basis, that's on you. You need to find a better cloud provider, and you need to vet your cloud provider or your on-prem vendor, whoever it is, more adequately to make sure this is not happening on a regular basis. So I have a decision to make now. Do I try to salvage this vendor relationship and see if they can actually bring some value to the table, or do I have to wash this up to, you know, a learning experience and go find somebody new? I haven't finally decided that yet, but that's where I'm at. All right, let's jump right into topic number two, HP server workstation. For a while now, I've been a very old computer that is my primary workstation. It's got decent specs, right? A 6-core AMD processor and 16 gigs of RAM and a 500 gig SSD, a lot of which I've talked about before, but it's not as reliable as I'd like it to be. And I have this server hardware behind me that's been kicking around for a while. And I've actually documented it pretty thoroughly here in the podcast before. It's an HP ML350 G6. And this is like a kind of a desktop style server. It's not a Blade. It's not a 2U or a 3U or whatever chassis. It's more like a desktop. It has 48 gigs of RAM. It has two Xeon processors, the E5530 version. I just bought a 1 terabyte Samsung Evo hard drive for it. I can't remember if it's the 860 or the 870. And I have a SATA 3 card in there to make that Evo go as fast as it can. I'm going to put a USB 3 card in there if I make this switch. And I'm planning on running Windows 10. So I just went through this process today of adding some of those components in and getting Windows 10 1903, kind of the newest version of Windows 10 available on there. The install went pretty smooth, not as fast as I would have expected. And ultimately, the system is not screaming fast. This is relatively old server hardware. It's a G6. When I think G10 is relatively modern. I'm not sure if there's anything newer than that out from HP right now. What I'm looking for is the resources this thing can bring, right? All the cores, and especially all the RAM. I'm going to want to use Hyper-V on it. I'm kind of to the point where I don't feel it's necessary in my lab to have the lab hardware physically separate from my day-to-day workstation. If I do ultimately go live with this thing, I've got a Radeon GPU that I recently got used, and it's working pretty well. I use it on my primary workstation right now. I've got that I want to put in there. A little bit hesitant. The server power situation is not the same as a desktop power. So they don't have the 8-pin and the 6-pin connectors that you would normally see to power a GPU. So what I did was I took the 10-pin power connector inside the server that runs the kind of the back-end SAS board. That's where all the hard drives run. I think this thing can hold 8 SAS hard drives. And that pulls a lot of amperage, so I know this thing has a lot of power available to it. And I kind of spliced it up and took the positives and the negatives, the positive 12-volt rails and just all the grounds. And I divided them up and took some old 8-pin and 6-pin PCIe adapters that I had, and I spliced it all together, kind of evened it out so that I was only putting 3 12-volt leads at max per rail or per 12-volt lead back to the power supply, and you know, taped it all up, made sure it was all clean, put a voltmeter on there, tested it, and made sure I was getting the proper voltage from the proper pins. And to do all this, I actually was just Googling the pinout of what these power supply cords, these 8-pin and 6-pin PCIe cords, need to verify. And all that's done. I have an older card that I didn't really care if I fried it available. So I put that in there and it seemed to power up just fine. I'm still a little bit hesitant. Do I plug my my good graphics card into this jerry-rigged power solution? I don't know. But that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm really hoping that ultimately I can switch over to this solution and get a lot of benefit out of it, right? Run dozens of VMs simultaneously with all those cores and all that RAM in Hyper-V on Windows 10 without really affecting the main system, and be able to do all the production and video and video editing, audio editing, capturing, that kind of stuff that I do with my current system. If anybody has any thoughts on that, any experience using servers as a desktop OS with Windows 10 or a desktop OS, I'd be interested. It installs just fine. It kind of finds all the core drivers that it needs. I don't see any problem with that. It is a pain to reboot because it's a server. The boot and post process is somewhere around 5 minutes. It's ridiculously slow. So that's a pain if I need to reboot it. The other thing I've debated is actually just skip Windows 10 and just install a server OS on there. Go ahead and go to server 2016 or possibly even server 2019 if the hardware would support it. The OS is going to be a little bit more resilient then, but am I going to find some compatibility issues? Will I have a hard time running the desktop software that I want to run on a server OS? If anybody has any experience using server OSs as kind of a high-powered workstation or using server class hardware as a desktop solution, shoot me an email and let me know. I'd be interested in your feedback, you know, as I move forward with this little pet project. And finally here, I want to talk a little bit about some behind the podcast updates. And we are approaching 1 year of consistent content. So I started this in 2017, kind of towards the end of the year, put out 2 episodes, and then life kind of took hold, and I had to ended up in the process of moving a house, and that kind of took my studio and threw it out the window. So it took me a year to recover from that and really get back into creating content. And episode 3 was the start of that, and that was back in, oh, you know what? Maybe it's actually episode 4. So maybe I did 3 episodes at my old apartment and then started out here, I think, in early October with episode 4. And we're approaching October of 2019. So we're coming up on a year. And it's been fantastic. I am loving it. It's definitely different than what I thought it was going to be. But the direction that it's taken kind of on its own and with my interests as they've developed is not what I expected, but really enjoying it. We are approaching 10,000 unique downloads, and that's a pretty cool milestone for me. There's no real clear way. It's not like YouTube where you can see how many subscribers you have. As far as I can tell, when I release an episode, within 24 hours, I have 175 downloads to that episode. So that makes me think that I have about 175 subscribers, if you were to think of it that way. That's amazing. That's like blows me away that so many people subscribe to the show on their various devices. And I really hope people are getting value out of it and enjoying it. And they feel like, you know, we're connecting, because that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the ability to connect and bring value and valuable content to as many people as possible. In just 1 year, to have that many people consistently interested in downloading the podcast just blows me away, and I really appreciate it. On top of that, as an episode just hangs out there, it typically goes well above 300 downloads. And some have, depending on the episode, some seem to be more popular. They've reached in the 600s for whatever reason. I mean, that really starts to blow me away. So I really appreciate you guys out there, and I'd love to hear from you. One thing I would say is I'm still getting limited user feedback, and I understand that completely, because I still today have a hard time taking the time, getting to a computer, or remembering the email address or whatever, and reaching out and giving feedback to the podcasts that I like. So if I can't do it, but I'm asking you guys to do it, I understand it's not an easy thing to do. A lot of times you're listening to this when you're occupied driving or, you know, mowing the lawn or whatever. Anything you guys can do to let me know that you're there and give me some feedback, I'd appreciate it. You can always send me emails, dustin@sysadminshow.com. A couple of things I have coming up are video in the lab. So for a while now, when I've done in the lab episodes, like I just did episode 28, I'm recording my desktop, and that's just going to be a consistent thing going forward. I'm getting better at that process. It still takes me some time to edit. I think I finally found a good video editing solution. I want to add actual video, like a video camera, to the lab, and I've got it sitting here. It's looking at me. I've been testing it. I don't know how I'm going to use it exactly. I don't think it's not just to look at me, but that is part of it. I feel like that's going to bring a little bit more connection to those episodes, so that you can kind of see my facial expressions and all that. But also, if there's other things in the lab that I want to be able to show you, I can video those as well. And just earlier, I don't know if I'm going to use it or not, but just earlier when I was setting up my workstation with Windows 10, I was actually just taking the output of that computer on HDMI as it was being installed and as the computer was posting and booting and going through the install process, and I was recording all that. It may be useful to show you guys some of that process. I'm not sure yet, but that's the kind of stuff I'm looking into. Another thing I want to talk about here as we wrap things up, because I've got 3 minutes left, is I want to schedule a live stream Q&A session. I'm going to be on video if all that works out. That's the plan. I don't know what platform I'm going to use yet. I haven't decided, but I've decided that it's going to be Thursday, September 5th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if this is something that you're interested in, you don't have to register ahead of time. I'm going to send out links and everything. It's not something that you're going to be locked out of. Anybody can join once it goes live. But I want to get an idea of how many people are going to be there. And I want to know how to let you know if you're interested, how to send you an invite and let you know what platform. I still haven't decided. Am I going to do a YouTube live stream? Am I going to do some sort of Facebook thing that I'm not as familiar with? Am I going to do a completely different thing like Zoom? I haven't figured that part out yet. But I want to put it on the calendar. And part of what I'm doing here is getting outside of my comfort zone. I've been wanting to do this for a while, and for no reason at all, I've been putting it off and just thinking, oh, that's in the future. Well, not anymore. I'm putting a calendar date on the books. I'm just going to figure out what I have to do to make it happen, and we'll go from there. So this is a Q&A. It's kind of like an AMA. Ask me anything. I'm just going to go on there. I have no idea what, just talk a little bit, I guess, for a few minutes about the show, kind of introduce myself, and then say, hey, any questions out there? Any sysadmin questions? Any career questions? Right, that kind of stuff I love answering. You can really ask me anything, and then we'll see how it goes. And my plan would be to do at least 30 minutes, but that might, we'll see how that goes. I want to be respectful of people's time. So let's just set it for 30 minutes. So from 9 to 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, it's next week on Thursday, September 5th. Email me to register. Send me an email, dustin@sysadminshow.com, and show me that you're interested, and I will make sure that you get all the info to get connected into that. I should also, I'm not sure if I'm going to put it out in social media. I kind of want this first one to be, you know, just the people who have gotten to the end, right, of a arbitrary update podcast. You guys are kind of more the core audience, the real true fans, and I appreciate that. So I want you guys there when I do this first thing, kind of breaking out of my comfort zone. So that's it. My time's up. I want to hear from you. Questions about your education, career, technology, ideas for future episode, and feedback. Send me emails, dustin@sysadminshow.com. Follow me on Twitter @sysadminshow. I'm not very active on Twitter, but I do get notifications. I do have an account, so if that's easier for you, you can get in contact with me on there. And until next time, I encourage you to never stop learning.